This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we're going to discuss Tuesday's primaries. Dark money poured into races, but the vast majority is not being disclosed to the Federal Election Commission, according to Open Secret's latest analysis. The 2022 election cycle has already attracted more than $115 million in contributions by 501c groups reported to the commission. Most national media outlets were focused on candidates Donald Trump supported or opposed. But as today's guest, John Nichols, reports on the Democratic side, ideas and candidates rattled the party establishment. John Nichols is national affairs correspondent for The Nation and the author of many books, including his latest, Coronavirus Criminals and Pandemic Profiteers, Accountability for Those Who Caused the Crisis. Hi, John. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Rose. It's great to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you back, John. I just want to ask you a quick question about our last segment about CPAC in Hungary and figures on the far right here in the U.S. proudly embracing authoritarians in Hungary and around the globe, in Europe, I should say. Greg just called. He said, why don't Democrats say anything about this? And we had the same call yesterday. We're not really hearing much from Democrats on CPAC Hungary.
No, you're not. And that's because, for the most part, Democrats don't see themselves as part of an international struggle on behalf of democracy. Most Democrats, and frankly, most of our media, tends to focus so closely on American politics that they don't begin to take in the full picture. And that's a terrible mistake on their part. There's a handful of folks who really are internationalists. Bernie Sanders, for instance, has been very involved with the Progressive International, and there are some other members who do have that wider view. But by and large, Democrats imagine that they're in a struggle against Donald Trump and some folks in the Republican Party here at home. And they lose sight of the fact that, you know, Trump and those around him, people like Steve Bannon, have been very engaged with political movements and political activities around the world. In fact, the truth of the matter is, and I wrote a lot about this in one of my previous books, Steve Bannon is an international political consultant. His work in America is just a tiny part of what he does. He's been active in countries all over Europe, in the Middle East. And once we understand it in that context, Democrats should be talking a lot more about CPAC Hungary and all of these other issues.
Yeah, because, John, it's so important to think that these various groups are partnering with the U.S. Christian Legal Army, which I'm sure people have never even heard of, to roll reproductive rights back across the globe. They're pushing for LGBTQ free zones. And then at CPAC Hungary, you've got far-right Christian nationalists, neo-Nazi groups, and people like Matt Schlapp are rubbing shoulders with these people, saying they want to learn from them.
That's right. And this is something that people really, I think they need to have a much deeper understanding of the big difference between conservative media in the United States and mainstream and progressive media in the United States. Mainstream and progressive media in the United States, by and large, doesn't pay much attention to the rest of the world. Conservative media actually does. And that's a very interesting thing because obviously much of conservative media is very nationalistic. You have Trump's America First appeal and all this. But the deeper sort of darker side of this is that particularly on a lot of the social media platforms, you see the right, this emerging right wing that is very, very different than the old kind of conservative, movements of Barry Goldwater or Ronald Reagan. You see this new right as being very, very white nationalist, very, very much tied to racist and xenophobic themes that link them in with all sorts of other nationalistic groupings in Europe, especially. And it's like people don't realize that when a member like former Congressman Steve King of Iowa gets in trouble, right, for literally hanging out with neo-Nazis in Europe, he is not an outlier. He is an example of something that's actually quite common. And so the right, as it's developed in the United States, is very, very much involved with movements and candidates and politics around the world. The left in the United States sometimes is, but, you know, involved with some internationalist approaches. But actually, it's quite rare.
We're going to jump in and talk about Democrats in a minute, but I just want to ask you about this great column by Greg Sargent, The Washington Post. Say it clearly, Republicans just nominated a pro-Trump insurrectionist. He writes, yep. For the love of democracy, please stop using the phrase election denier. Now that Doug Mastriano has won the GOP nomination for governor in Pennsylvania, countless news accounts are describing him with that phrase. That's meant to convey the idea that he will not accept Trump's re-election loss. True, but it's insufficient. He writes, let's say this plainly. Pennsylvania Republicans just nominated a full-blown insurrectionist who intends to use the power of the office to ensure that as long as he's governor, no Democratic presidential candidate wins his state again.
Yeah, I've been working on a big piece on Mastriano, and Greg did a great job there by any measure, as he always does. But yeah, I've been looking at Mastriano a lot, and the big piece in The Nation next week on him. Look, this is a guy who goes beyond Trump. He is far more extreme than Trump. In fact, although Trump backed him, sometimes he goes to places that actually is troublesome for Trump and Trump's inner circle, because Mastriano is so extreme, not just on election issues, but a host of other issues. If we focus in on the election denial, what's said here is exactly correct. He is an insurrectionist. He was actively involved in Pennsylvania, a battleground state, in trying to overturn an 80,000 vote victory, not a close result, an 80,000 vote victory for Joe Biden in 2020. And when they failed to do so, despite some incredible efforts to literally have the legislature just reject the will of the people, when they failed to do so, then Mastriano used his own funds, his campaign funds, to organize buses to travel to the January 6th Stop the Steal rally that Donald Trump spoke to, at which Donald Trump said, urged people to fight like hell to prevent the certification of election results by the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate. Mastriano then traveled with the crowd to the Capitol. And there's video that suggests, and he has disputed this to some extent, but there's pretty solid video that suggests he crossed police lines. There is simply no question that he and people associated with him were outside the Capitol. He says he didn't go into the Capitol physically, but were there at the scene of a insurrectionist coup attempt that sought to prevent the certification of election results that showed Donald Trump had lost the presidency. So this guy is, he is a very significant player on the insurrectionist right in the U.S. And it's one of the reasons why the group Free Speech for People has argued that the Secretary of the Commonwealth in Pennsylvania should decertify Doug Mastriano as a candidate, should deny him a place on the November ballot, because the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, Section 3, says that insurrectionists cannot hold public office at the federal or state level.
Well, in this primary, John, he blew away everyone else. He got over 589,000 votes. The next candidate, Lou Barletta, got 272,000.
And this was despite a major, major effort by very, very conservative folks who are quite aligned with Donald Trump on a lot of issues, to stop Mastriano from winning the nomination. They failed because they had a divided opposition. Mastriano didn't get a majority of the votes, although he did very, very well. He got, I think, around 44% of the vote. And it's possible that if there'd been a united opposition, they might have been able to stop him. But he is the nominee now. And I have to be honest, in talking to Democrats in Pennsylvania, they think they're in a position that's very good, that they'll be able to defeat this candidate because he just won't be able to sell with the great mass of voters in Pennsylvania. But, you know, as Donald Trump taught us, you should be careful what you wish for. And so at the end of the day, there is a candidate now potentially in a position to become governor of Pennsylvania and then to appoint the person who oversees elections going into the 2024 presidential election. Mm.
Well, let's spend some time talking about what happened on the Democratic side, specifically progressive Democrats running on Tuesday. Justice Democrats is the progressive group that encouraged Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to run. And their executive director, Alexandra Rojas, told MSNBC that since they started running progressive Democrats, they have seen a lot of money coming in to defeat them. So let's talk about that money. There's a new lobbying group called the United Democracy Project. And as you report, John, it was created in December by AIPAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee. So tell us more about the United Democracy Project, because it's spending a lot of money on important congressional races on the Democratic side.
It sure is.
Well, and the Republican side, but for now we'll talk about Democrats.
Actually, no, Rose, you were right in what you initially said. This United Democracy Project appears, at least if looking at its filings with Open Secrets, and it does have to file, it appears to be focused primarily on Democratic races. Now, AIPAC's Political Action Committee, and these groups are very closely tied. It's money moving from one place to another. AIPAC's Political Action Committee has indeed supported a lot of very conservative Republicans as well, Democrats and Republicans. But the United Democracy Project seems to be primarily focused on Democratic races and on Democratic primaries, where it comes in with huge amounts of money, you know, in the millions of dollars, and with a fund that looks to have tens of millions in it, to oppose progressive candidates. And particularly, and it's been striking that the candidates that they have opposed have tended to be women of color. Summer Lee in Pennsylvania, a couple of African-American women running in North Carolina, Jessica Cisneros running down on the Texas border. And so it's raised a lot of alarm bells. There really is a deep concern about, you know, this group's incredibly high spending. And also, if I could point out, it's incredibly dishonest messaging in its campaigning. The messaging has tended, especially in the Summer Lee campaign, to have really no relation to the facts, and called out as such by local media in Pennsylvania and in other places around the country.
So the United Democracy Project says its organization is, quote, united in the belief that America's partnership with our democratic ally Israel benefits both countries, end quote. And yet, John, so many people pointed out that in the ads, they do not mention Israel. In the case of Summer Lee, and we'll talk more about her, they just say that she's not a real Democrat.
That's exactly right. And this is called out. And high marks to particularly public radio in the Pittsburgh area that's done really good coverage of a lot of this from early on. But yeah, the TV ads and the mailings that have gone out have tended to suggest that Summer Lee is some kind of bad Democrat. And, you know, or even not a Democrat, somebody who's out to destroy the party. And there's been similarly dishonest messaging in other races around the country. And you know, here's the thing. If this group was coming in and saying, look, we disagree with Summer Lee's position on Israel and Palestine, that would certainly be their right, at least under the current campaign finance system in the United States. And they could raise their concerns. But they're not doing that. And you ask yourself, well, why aren't they doing that? Well, the answer is pretty simple. Summer Lee's position on Israel-Palestine is to say that she respects the rights of Israelis and Palestinians, that she thinks that Jews and Christians and Muslims in that region have a right to be respected, and they have a right to be safe. And she is supportive of efforts to achieve peaceful resolutions to conflicts in the region. Now, that position is very, very popular, according to polling, with not just Democrats, but a great many people across the political spectrum in the United States. So if you attacked Summer Lee for that stance, you wouldn't get very far. You know, and so instead you come in with an attack on her as supposedly a bad Democrat, right? So, and that maybe that could get resonance, is the theory. But even that was a dishonest attack, because they were saying that Summer Lee had a hard time choosing between Donald Trump and Joe Biden in 2020. Well, in fact, Summer Lee, along with Bernie Sanders and members of the United Electrical Union, rallied on behalf of Joe Biden shortly before the 2020 election in what was considered a very important intervention on behalf of the Democratic ticket in a closely divided state. So it's just a dishonest attack.
So for people who have not been following this race, Summer Lee is a 34-year-old Black woman who serves as a Pennsylvania state rep. And it looks like she won officially, John, because the race was actually really close. But I was just looking at the latest numbers. Right now, she's at 47,170. And then Steve Irwin is at 46,488. I mean, that is very, very close.
It's about a little under 700 votes, yeah.
Right. And so she has the support of Senator Bernie Sanders. She's for the Green New Deal. She's for a lot of these progressive policies. And yet, as you report, as of May 12th, the United Democracy Project, which was created by AIPAC in December, spent $1.8 million to attack Summer Lee.
It's much more than that now. It went up in the final filings. In all, it looks like about $3.3 million was spent either attacking Summer Lee or propping up her opponent in this race. And one of the interesting things about it is that you did list, you know, some of the folks that backed Summer Lee. It's also important to point out that Bend the Arc Jewish Action, a Jewish group in Pittsburgh, its Pittsburgh affiliate, was actively organizing on the ground for Summer Lee. And that J Street, the national group that supports the right of Israel to exist, and to be safe in its borders, but also seeks peaceful resolutions in the Middle East, has been very complimentary and supportive of Summer Lee. So it's notable that she has had support from, you know, really a pretty diverse spectrum of folks in the Pittsburgh area and nationally.
John, a lot of young activists are tweeting about this, and they're really angry about the money coming in, especially from the United Democracy Project. Ezra Olef Lieberman, an electoral organizer at the Sunrise Movement, wrote a piece in The Nation running today called AIPAC's Dangerous New Anti-Democratic Project. And he wrote, AIPAC spent $5 million to defeat Nita Alam and Erica Smith in North Carolina, and millions elsewhere. AIPAC is not alone. Its AstroTurf affiliate, the Democratic Majority for Israel, and tech billionaire Reid Hoffman's mainstream Democrats, PAC, have spent millions attacking popular progressives. Over $18 million so far. And then he goes on to write, support for Palestinian freedom is an increasingly popular common sense and principled position, like the Green New Deal and Medicare for All. So just like any other corporate PAC that needs to get lawmakers to support unpopular policies, AIPAC has to engage in increasingly anti-democratic tactics to succeed. What about this, John? Because a lot of young people are saying, we are so tired of this, all of this money flowing into these races. And why is a PAC affiliated with AIPAC spending so much money on these congressional races?
Well, you know, look, it isn't just this PAC, and it isn't just AIPAC, or you can expand it out. One of the things that folks with political aspirations in this country have figured out is that moving money into specific races, especially moving money into primaries, is a way to advance your agenda. There's two things. Number one, it can defeat candidates who you don't think will be in lockstep with you on every issue. Two, it can elect candidates who will feel a sense of connection to you, or perhaps even a sense of duty to those who help them get elected. Remember, politicians are quite aware, even if you can't coordinate between certain political action committees and campaigns, they're well aware of who comes in to help them win or lose. And so we've seen this across the country. And if I can just highlight one thing that happened out in Oregon, you had a cryptocurrency billionaire come in and spend more than $12 million in one district, trying to prop up a particular candidate and defeat another candidate. $12 million coming into a Democratic primary. Now, it happened, amazingly enough, the progressive candidate who was running in that district won. The crypto billionaire didn't buy the seat. But the fact of the matter is that the amount of money that is flowing into districts across the country is jaw-dropping. And yes, you're right. A lot of young people are looking at this as a real threat to democracy and something that they're deeply concerned about, but frankly, it ought to be something everybody of every age is concerned about, because we've entered into a new age, a new era of campaign spending. And it is much more secretive, much more negative as well. And it's something that's very, very hard, I think, for a lot of our media to keep up with, because the money is flowing so fast. Just look at a moment ago, you were citing a figure very accurate, you know, 1.8 million. It was what I had written about just a few days ago. And yet in a matter of days, that had moved, you know, substantially higher.
Right. Let's talk about the really important race this Tuesday. Democrats in South Texas will vote between progressive immigration lawyer Jessica Cisneros, who is pro-choice, and Democratic Representative Henry Cuellar, who is anti-choice. According to the Texas Tribune, they disagree on unions, border security, oil and gas. Jessica Cisneros has support from Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren. Cuellar has support from Nancy Pelosi and James Clyburn. Just on that point, John, Jose Borjan, a Washington-based lobbyist who's from South Texas, who once worked for Cuellar, said this is a huge race for Democrats. He says it serves as a proxy fight amid a larger divide within the party nationally. It's a huge deal because it pits progressive policies espoused by Cisneros over Cuellar. And this is according to the Texas Tribune. What are your thoughts on this, John? I mean, you've got this happens in a lot of districts where you've got Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and others supporting the progressive, and then Speaker Pelosi and then longtime Democrats. Well, Bernie's a longtime Dem too, but
he's not a Democrat, actually. He's an independent.
Independent, right. But yeah, like James Clyburn. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I got a lot of thoughts on it, probably more than we've got time left in the show. A couple of years ago, I wrote a book called The Fight for the Soul of the Democratic Party. And the fact is, there is an ongoing fight for the soul of the Democratic Party. It's one of the biggest stories in America, and actually, by and large, one of the most underreported stories in America. These sorts of primaries, these sorts of battles go on at the local, state, and national level on a constant basis. And they are battles between progressives who believe in an economic and social and racial justice agenda that seeks to save the planet and emphasizes diplomacy rather than warfare internationally. And folks who are often described as centrists, but are really quite often corporatists, folks who are very, very closely linked to corporate power, corporate interests, who raise a lot of their money, if not from the exact same people that Republicans raise it from similar people to those that the Republicans have influence with. And it's one of the reasons, the fact that the Democratic Party has yet to really kind of clarify where it stands in these great struggles over corporate power, it's one of the reasons why you see so much frustration with our politics and in many cases, such an abandonment of the Democratic Party by working class voters. The tragedy is that abandonment by working class voters is often exploited by right-wing forces that use racism and xenophobia and other tactics. But, you know, it's best to understand that a part of the problem is that the Democratic Party lacks clarity on where it stands on issues of corporate power. And that's what an awful lot of these races, like the one in South Texas, come back to.
Right. And a lot of people are very angry that Nancy Pelosi is supporting an anti-choice Dem just a month before the Supreme Court will most likely overturn Roe.
Muddies the message. And again, This is something that frustrates a lot of people within the Democratic Party and outside of it. But Rose, I have to tell you, this is a struggle that's been going on for 80 years. It is right. A long, deep struggle within the Democratic Party. It has not been resolved. And again, from a journalistic standpoint, it's one of the most remarkable stories because it just keeps flaring and it keeps, you know, being a source of struggle. But it becomes particularly interesting at this point because, as you've noted in this segment, corporate money and outside money is really flowing in on behalf of the more centrist corporate candidates in a lot of these races.
John Nichols is national affairs correspondent for The Nation and author of many books, including The Fight for the Soul of the Democratic Party, The Enduring Legacy of Henry Wallace's Anti-Fascist, Anti-Racist Politics. As always, John, thanks for your great reporting and thank you for joining us.
Great honor to be with you, Rose. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show and Kevin Vance for engineering our show. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.